Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hey you, welcome to the latest edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, blasting sounds at you every Friday like an audio Sunday paper gone wrong, alright, filling your head and your hearts with telegraphs from the Temple of Tech. This is your weekly dose of infotainment rest cure from the tech surgeons who bring you PC Advisor, TechWorld, MacWorld UK and ComputerWorld UK, and today, Digital Arts. Every 7 days, we escape the rain by ducking into the audio comedy tent at a disappointingly corporate audio rock festival, waiting for cast to finish on the main stage, as we chew over the big issues of the week in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. You can hear us thanks to our sponsor, Audio Technica, and find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Don't forget to subscribe, review and tell your friends. Do it right now, listener. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by the injustice-fighting Chris Martin, Consumer Tech Editor of PC Advisor.
Hello.
The faster-than-lightning Charlotte G, Editor of TechWorld.com.
Good morning.
And the very, very frightening Neil Bennett, Editor of Digital Arts.
Hello.
This week we are talking Facebook's F8, HTC's 10 and Amazon's £300 e-reader. And in the end it turns out it was all a dream. So, pin back your lug holes, listener. I am going in. HTC, easy as 1, 2, 3, easy as HBC, ABC, HTC, I don't know, Chris Martin. HTC had 3 ones and now it has a 10. What gives, my brother?
So, yeah, HTC has launched a new phone, and it's dropped the one, as in the word one,
right,
from the model name. So now it's just called the HTC 10.
So it's gone straight from 1 to 10. That's like a leap of 9.
M7, M8, 1M9. Sorry, 1M7, 1M11.
Yeah, so it's the HTC 10.
And now it's the power of 10.
Right.
Which is to do with partly HTC building phones for 10 years, and partly 10 being the perfect score. So 10 out of 10 is what they're aiming for.
It's going to be tricky this time next year, isn't it?
So, yeah, I don't know what they're going to do.
This one goes up to 11. This one,
it's going to be Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Sponsored phone.
So I noticed a certain amount of meh in the reaction to the HTC 10, but we saw a lot of audience interest on PC Advisor, a lot of audience interest.
Yeah.
So should we care?
I think we should care, even though smartphones have got to very much a kind of hit a ceiling where it's very difficult for these companies to differentiate and make them new and better and make people want to upgrade. We were kind of a little bit shocked at how many readers were trying to find out all the details and were interested in whether they were going to upgrade from their M7s that they'd been using for many years.
So, I mean, typically speaking, HTC's made really great phones. What is great about this one, if anything?
So they're following a very set formula, basically, from the last three phones. So where LG's kind of shaken things up with the modular design, and Samsung has just tweaked its design, HTC's done something similar where the design is basically the same, but there are hardware improvements kind of throughout. So the screen's better, the camera's better, the audio's better. Generally, the whole thing is
performance
is better. They're basically claiming that it's the best phone on the market in a number of areas.
The best phone ever.
pretty much.
And HTC also makes nice products. I mean, they were the first to make a metallic phone, I think. Possibly even before Apple to make a fully metal phone.
That is possibly true, yes.
Put bone of contention between them. It doesn't really matter, does it? But the point is they were certainly the first non-Apple manufacturer to make a device that you would be proud to kind of hold in front of actual human beings.
Yeah, I think I remember saying something along the lines of the M7 or one of the original ones being the first kind of Android phone that had come along with a build quality to match Apple.
Yeah.
And they have maintained that, but it you can't help but feel a little bit bored by similarity sometimes.
But we don't want our listeners to feel bored.
No.
So how does it compare to like the Huawei P9 and the other flagships that are out there right now?
It compares very similarly, but we've kind of we've reached a point where all of these phones have quad HD screens. You know, they're all perfectly good enough on the processor side of things. Obviously, we benchmark them and stuff, but the numbers kind of are meaning less and less as we go on. Like, you don't notice the difference when you're using them. So it's really coming down to things like camera and, like, I guess what you'd call special features like waterproofing.
Audio?
Audio, I think, is still much more niche than, say, the camera for most people. But they really have gone down that avenue, so a bit like Sony. So if you are an audiophile looking for the best phone in terms of audio, then the HTC is possibly one of them. Although arguably the LG G5 has the hi-fi module that you can plug in, which has an amp and a DAC inside.
All right, so wow me with the other differentiator, which is price. How much is this going to cost you?
Price is actually a little bit higher than I was expecting. Right. So it's 569, which is the same as the Galaxy S7.
That's a tricky spot to be in if you're competing against Samsung.
It's tricky, yeah. And the G5 has already dropped to 499, and it's only been out for a couple of weeks. So,
So I think we're probably struggling to find something to get too excited about. Let's open it up to Charlotte and Neil. You know, neither of you are professionally particularly interested in smartphones. Anything grabbing you about HTC's launch this week?
I just want a phone that has decent battery life.
What phone, if you don't mind me asking, what phone are you using right now? Is this one of your Chinese specials?
Yes, I have a OnePlus 2.
Okay, that's a great phone.
Yes, it's a very good phone. And it has an excellent camera. Probably the best camera I've had on a phone before. But you kind of always have this situation where battery life gradually declines. And it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, it certainly is. And as I said before on this pod, I use a pretty cheap phone, principally because it's got better battery life. And it's really important on a sort of grander scale. It's actually really important because one of the things that will help us hopefully solve power as an issue in terms of the environment is batteries, being able to transport power from one place to another.
Yeah.
And it does seem to me there's a challenge for these companies who are competing for headlines, and HTC is a classic example of that, that they add features and they add power, and it actually, if anything, makes battery life worse.
Yeah,
do you care? You're an iPhone user, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got quite an old iPhone. Probably will upgrade at some point in the near future. But I think what's interesting about that is that, you know, we're saying this is a really great phone, but it's very hard for us to get excited about it. Yeah. We're so used to having revolutionary new features come out from they may not be revolutionary. They're certainly being described as revolutionary with every new Apple release. Mm. There's something that comes out that's actually just pretty damn good, and you go, meh.
Yeah, so it's so hard to differentiate.
Well, I think that's the whole point, isn't it? And HTC, is a company that actually is struggling a bit because it doesn't have the scale of Huawei, and it doesn't have the peak quality, or at least perception of peak quality, of someone like Apple. Mm. So, you know,
stuck in the middle.
Yeah, and I think that's the worst place to be always. Mm. You'd better off being the sort of cheap bargain basement company or the very top. And, you know, I think what we saw in terms of audience reaction is there are a lot of people who, once they've got an HTC phone, love it and want to stay with it. But how you convert someone new to a phone that's £500, I don't know.
And also, Apple's very good at locking you into their ecosystem. Yeah. You know, once you've got the phone, and then you've got the iPad, and then you've got the computer, and you've got the apps, and your information is shared seamlessly between them.
Yeah.
At what point are you going to go, well, actually, I'm going to make my life more complicated and you know, by throwing another phone into the mix?
Apple basically hangs around outside schools handing out free first joint, which is the iPhone. And then once you're hooked on the iPhone, then you start buying all the other stuff.
Lifetime user.
You find yourself living in a basement, honking on an iPad. Or something.
Yeah, Apple is the Irvin Welsh role in Trainspotting.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly, that's Apple.
Okay, so basically what we're saying, and we haven't tested it yet, but the HTC 10 is likely to be one of the best phones on the market this year?
Yeah, early impressions are that it is a very good phone.
Yeah.
I guess the problem from our point of view, or my point of view, in terms of getting excited is, I've seen all these phones. We get all
you're
the
dead
phones
inside.
In.
Yes.
So
you do want to rotate in your role at work? Should we do a swap for a while?
I mean, perhaps from a reader perspective, who they don't see these phones before they come out and all this kind of thing. Perhaps it is way more exciting for them, and it did seem to be during the live blog that we did.
Without wishing to talk too much about, without wishing to throw daylight on magic. There was something interesting about the launch, wasn't there? Because they trailed that it was going to be a live stream, and then it wasn't.
Yeah.
So there was no actual event.
It was surprising, for starters, for there not to be like a physical launch like we would normally do, like with Huawei a couple of weeks ago, where there were 2,000 people there and they make a big hoo-ha about it.
I do like a hoo-ha.
So we were a bit surprised about that. We then thought, it's going to be launched online at 1 o'clock. They provided, said join us on htc.com at 1 o'clock, and all will be revealed. And it wasn't actually a live stream; the details just appeared, and there was like a 2-3 minute video explaining the phone with a few other videos of some kind of customer reaction to different elements. So we ended up doing a live blog anyway. And just explaining the phone to all the
readers.
Nothing's
happening.
I just explained the phone to the readers bit by bit, and then did a bit of a Q&A, because these companies don't often answer all the questions very well that people have about these phones. So it worked quite well.
Potentially, quite a refreshing change from the bombast, as Neil said, like that every launch has to be the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a challenge, isn't it, I think, for the HTC.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. Like, Vive is going to be
their popular VR product.
Yeah, their VR headset is going to be probably a bigger winner than this phone.
Okay, so let's see what our esteemed colleagues think as we go around the room. Chris Martin, HTC 10 launch, HT A plus, or HT must do better.
Bit of both, but...
We always get this every week, it's a bit of both. I try and make these binary.
I know. It's just too difficult to choose one or the other.
Okay, so HT meh?
HT meh.
HT dunno.
Okay, HT dunno, that's the third option. Is that your answer, Charlotte?
Yeah, I've got to go with that now.
Yeah. Neil, HTC A plus, HT dunno, or HT must do better?
Yeah, whatever. Where's my Vive?
Okay. On that bombshell, we'll take a short break and we'll be back to talk Facebook. Charlotte G. What has Facebook been up to this week?
Well, they have had their annual F8 Developers Conference.
What does F8 mean?
That's a very good question. And
is it just, as we discussed yesterday, a key on the keyboard?
That is what I presume, but I'm now that you've said that, I'm wondering if there's a deeper meaning.
But if you're going to go for F8, why wouldn't you go for spacebar?
I'm not sure spacebar sounds...
Fate. Is it their fate?
Fate, F8, fate, maybe.
Could be.
Spacebar sounds like it's over-promising.
Well, I was thinking F8 is a bit more... UK Tech Weekly Podcast Developer Conference, we'll call it spacebar.
Yeah, I think so.
Or maybe function.
Function.
I'd call it tab.
Tab. Ooh. Ooh, and we could drink cans of clear cola.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Yeah. Anyway, sounds great.
So what else did Facebook do other than have a developer conference called F8?
Well, the main announcement, and certainly the main kind of area that's caught interest in the press, has been the announcements around the Messenger app and chatbots. So they're going to be integrating chatbots functionality into Messenger. So you could message... well, actually, there currently is a bot for Taco Bell. TacoBot.
So the idea is that you transact over Messenger.
Yep. So the business, they, from their side, they have a sort of automatic customer service assistant, which is, to be clear, not a real person. You message them.
It's a bot.
It's a bot. You message this bot and they kind of take your order and process it for you.
Sure.
Cutting out kind of the middleman, I suppose, or stealing jobs. Don't know.
And this is a little bit like, there's a product you've been trying in the UK, is it Hero?
Oh yeah, yeah, there is, yes, there's an app actually that does exactly that, that's about messaging.
Yeah.
For businesses. So basically, it's meant to eliminate that annoying kind of staying on hold for ages on the phone,
yeah,
and sort of recreate the experience you have, like WhatsApping your friends, but for a company.
And there's been sort of a bit of talk about this. We talked about it with regards to Microsoft Build recently.
Yes.
And the argument from the technology side is always that younger people don't like phoning.
Yeah, apparently millennials don't pick up the phone.
Yeah. Which is, you know, a thing, I guess. But the reality is, as you sort of hinted at before, it's much cheaper for a business to have a bot that reacts to customers than it is to have pesky humans getting in the way.
Yes, true, true. And also, I mean, I would like to see some of the evidence behind some of the claims made around millennials. Because I saw something yesterday that claimed that millennials don't eat meals, which I'm pretty sure is not
Hang on a minute. We talked about breakfast before you came on yeah. the show, and it transpired, oh, who didn't have breakfast?
Okay, yeah, yeah,
the
I know.
Millennial around the table.
Guilty as charged. Yeah, we apparently don't eat meals. Who knew?
Just in case Charles' parents are listening, she's going to have a large afternoon meal, so it should be all right in the end.
Yeah, okay. Don't worry, Mum and Dad. Yeah. Love you lots. Yes, anyway, back to chatbots. So that will be stuff like you go on and say, call me an Uber to, you know, your home, for example, or whatever address. You just would say that to the bot and then it would go away and do it for you.
Yeah.
But the question is whether or not you will have your own personal chatbot or whether you'll interact separately with different bots for each individual company. So probably eventually you'll have your own one.
Okay. So you have your own character that you speak to, almost like a kind of Siri.
Siri or Cortana. Okay. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And then technologically, it's really interesting.
Yes.
Because to be able to tie all that stuff together is a big ask.
Artificial intelligence.
Sure.
And deep learning.
And specifically what Facebook said this week was that in the US from now, you can transact with bots over Messenger.
Yes, if it's enabled by that company. I mean, I think CNN have got a chatbot at the moment. I think the problem is, the problem so far is that it depends on the quality of the bot, because some of them, sort of, for example, I don't know, if you try and ask what the weather is, unless you sort of phrase it in precisely the way that it's used to, it won't know. If you said, like, how hot is it today, it might not understand that versus what's the forecast for the next 3 days.
And that's a bit like with Google search, like Boolean search. And it never really became a mass market thing. Now it's much more, semantic search.
Mm.
So it guesses and understands.
Neil,
this is a subject you've been looking into quite a lot, isn't it?
I was going to say, the key difference here is that you have bots at the moment. You go on Dell's website, you go on Apple's website, it will pop up and it will ask you questions. But in the same way that kind of, because it's a bit like autonomous cars, you know, at the moment you have like parking sensors on your car. These are very, very simple things. You know, you have a process. You put some input into it and it gives you a series of predefined responses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the kind of chatbots you know that you have at the moment.
Yeah.
The difference in the future is going to be artificial intelligence. These things are going to be thinking for themselves. You know, as you said, you know, it's semantically looking at the words you're saying and working out
Learning. Kind
of what you mean rather than what you're saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's going to make a huge difference. In the meantime, however, there's going to be some awful stuff. You know, the first generation of bots are going to be terrible.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, but they need to learn. I mean, the whole point of this and the whole
reason... need to learn.
They need to learn.
Well, they're kind of like...
Well, they do.
They're kind of like a toddler.
Yeah. You know,
have a toddler.
We were saying with regards to Tay, the Twitter bot.
Yes.
Actually, that is a teenage person who needs to understand its limitations. So the fact that it's been spewing out all this racist invective is just because it's repeating what it hears.
Yeah.
Needs to understand the barriers. So that that kind of backs up your point, I guess, that they need to understand and learn and develop over time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Tay was a brilliant experiment. I mean, for a PR perspective, it wasn't great for the people behind it, but...
Or for Mexicans.
Well, yeah.
But it shows what happens if you take an AI and you don't train it well. Mm. And it shows why you do need to actually, you know, train these things to actually be helpful and guide them along the way.
Mm. Because the worst thing would be, as a company, to have this kind of interaction with your customers, but it not to work. A bit like, you know, exactly. When there was a rush for companies to get Twitter feeds, and that was great, and your parcel didn't deliver, so you could tweet at post office, and they'd say, yes, we've understood your complaint, and then nothing happened. That's loads worse than there not being someone there because you just made a call.
Yeah.
So from a DA perspective, from digital arts perspective, I guess creatives need to start thinking about the user experience of interacting with the bot.
Well, I think we know where the bar is when it comes to bots, and that's what you get when you phone up a call centre.
Yeah.
You know, recently a tree went down in my parents' house and took out the BT line, and they had
Your
real trouble.
Have trees in their houses?
Yeah. The tree down the road from them, took out the telephone line going through it. And they had real difficulty getting hold of BT to try and get a service and try and get people.
Oh, I've been there.
And that's the line. If bots can provide, they don't have to be perfect. They don't have to deliver. They just have to be better than what's available
at
the moment. So I think it's a case where, you know, you'll start seeing very, very simple bots offering very, very simple services. Mm. And they will then learn and they'll get better and get better and get better. And actually the really good thing about Facebook being involved in this is that they have the scale that the bots can learn from everyone's experiences.
Yeah.
But in the short term, in the next 6 months, you're going to have some horrible, horrible times getting really bad responses from these things. But every time it gets it wrong, if Facebook and these companies are doing it well, they will actually learn from that experience and get better.
Facebook is the perfect test bed because, as in the same way as with its sort of general media business, because people actively choose to interact with it. People present their information to Facebook. I completely take your point. Charlotte, I feel like I stepped in when you were about to say something there.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say that the thing that's interesting is obviously, I mean, when I was kind of doing a bit of research, I realised that bots have been around since the 1960s. So this kind of idea of interacting with something is not...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
New, but the thing that is interesting about this is kind of Satya Nadella, Microsoft's CEO, sort of referred to it as conversation as a platform. And the thing that's interesting is what developers will build for using kind of chatbot tech. So it's kind of where this will go. I think the only thing that I would say is that obviously the good thing is that Facebook has huge scale, but also the slightly scary thing is what exactly are we divulging to the companies that we're ordering from?
It was good from a business point of view. I mean, one of the questions I was going to ask is this creepy? Do we feel weird?
Yeah, because they'll have your credit. I mean, if you're ordering a pizza from a chatbot, they need to have your credit card data.
Let me just think about ordering a pizza for a second. So good.
Visualize, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, but one of the things that, again, to your point about this not being new, that does strike me about this is we kind of do this already, and it's that classic thing of, because I feel slightly icky about the idea of well, there's two aspects to it. We'll come on to the jobs bit in a minute, but I feel slightly icky about the idea of interacting with an organisation in this way, giving up my information to it. But always, or it seems to be in the Western world, convenience trumps concerns of privacy. So I am quite happy on a Friday night to text Domino's. Mm. Other pizza makers are available, but they're not as good. And, you know, in return for...
I was about to start listing alternative pizza places, sorry.
Papa John's is all right.
Papa John's pretty good. Firenze, near where I live. Very
Papa John's is better.
Really?
Yeah, it is better. That's
just as long as you don't go pizza, but that's mainly because I worked there about 20 years ago.
So okay,
I know where the bodies are buried. Yeah. There are no bodies buried.
They got used and put in the pizza.
Exactly. What am I saying?
Domino's has the best boxes, though.
Yeah.
Yes. Their new design boxes.
Yeah. Really cool. I'm not too bothered about giving a bot my details.
Mm.
Well, I don't. What's the difference between me typing my card details in on a website and ordering something than giving it to a bot? Isn't it basically the same?
Yes, I think it is. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, the difference is actually is whether that information is just shared between you and the company.
Whether it's transferred.
Or whether Facebook keeps some of that information. Now, if they keep some of that information just to train bots to get smarter, and they can, you know, properly anonymize it, then that's fine. But if they then build that into their big marketing database and start going, oh, we know that you always phone up and have order a pizza at this particular time, we're going to keep... Yeah, we're going to sell that to a competitor. So suddenly, instead of you getting an email from the people you always order a pizza from, you're suddenly getting five people going, oh,
Pizza Hut, naff off, stop emailing me.
So the privacy element is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think the point I was trying to make, and Neil just made it better than me, is that, because I was obsessing about pizzas, but is that, it's not necessarily, you're exactly right, Chris, it's not exactly as if you're giving over any more information and you're still giving it away to an organisation. But as this technology develops, it's going to at least initially feel creepy because you will start to be presented with opportunities based on your geography, because you've got Facebook on your phone, so it knows where
you've
you
got
are.
A friend nearby.
It knows what time it is, all that stuff, which on the one hand could be seen in a benign way as being just a means of making your life more convenient and better. But we also know that it's driven by marketing. So you're going to end up, as we do anyway, spending money on stuff you don't necessarily want. Or it almost becomes a bit like social engineering. But as I'm saying that, I realise I sound like the sort of person who wears a tin hat and is scared of Wi-Fi.
No, but I think it's a valid concern though, because I think certainly when you look at... Because I think inevitably you will eventually just have one chatbot that you interact with for all of these things.
Brian,
let's call him.
You can probably tell whatever you want to call him.
Brian, Sue.
Is that just your
choice? He's going to be called Brian.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So Brian the chatbot, that you're so sort of like your personal butler, I guess. Brian the bot butler. It doesn't sound quite right when you put it that way.
takes me back to prep school.
So the thing that's kind of worrying is how much Brian is going to know about you. Brian might know you better than you do.
Yeah.
So Brian might start suggesting stuff.
Exactly.
For example, don't get me wrong, I think all round, yes, it's going to make people's lives more convenient and there's not that a great deal to be scared about. But just the sort of, the kind of push marketing stuff slightly, that does slightly worry me.
It's also human nature to feel weird about that stuff. Mm. Like in the 80s, you millennials won't remember this, but they used to put fluoride in the water. The local authority used to put fluoride in the water. It was categorically a good thing because it improved the quality of people's teeth.
Yeah.
And there was a point when it became an issue because some people were like, that's kind of impinging on my freedom not to have fluoride in my water. It's impinging on my freedom to have bad teeth. Mm. And people do sometimes, probably quite naturally, although that's clearly a cracker's example, react in that way. But then it does seem that, you know, our interaction with technology over the past decade or so suggests that we're prepared to be kind of enveloped in the warm arms of some tech if it makes our life at least appear marginally easier.
Yeah. And we feel, and I think also it's feeling that people have given their consent for it to use our data for this thing.
Yeah,
so I think if it sort of randomly started saying, hey, you know, it's 5 p.m. on a Friday, do you want me to order you a pizza? Well, I don't know why we'd be doing that at that point. But if that was what you did every week,
I don't think these bots are going to change much of that whole situation. Really,
yeah.
It depends on how you use devices at the moment, how private you want to be. But
yeah.
For me, I don't think any more of my information could probably be out there. I don't like.
Good point.
I don't think using one of these bots is going to make any more difference, really.
And I'm sure companies will tweak kind of appropriately, like, do you want to be reminded about this or do you... So I'm sure, ultimately, they don't want to annoy users so much that they don't actually use it, so...
And are you concerned about the loss of jobs that is... I mean, is it inevitable that tech like this is going to... I hear some stats where people talk about 30% of the workforce in a country like the UK no longer having at least the same job.
Yeah.
In sort of 20 or 30.
I don't think some jobs will go, and in the short term that will be very difficult. And you can't really underestimate that. It will be difficult for people that are affected by that. But I think it will also create new jobs.
Yeah.
Kind of people that are, I don't know, training the chatbots or monitoring or analysing. Yeah. There will be kind of jobs around that as well.
There'll be more advanced jobs like that, but the jobs that the bot will take over, the simple,
they won't be replaced like for like.
Yeah.
There's not always that basic, though. That's the interesting thing. It's things, you know, if you're an independent financial advisor or an accountant.
Or a lawyer.
Yeah. A lot of that work, doesn't require human creativity so much as attention to detail.
And,
you know, algorithmically, a lot of that stuff can be done better anyway.
Yeah.
Like trading, stock market trading, is pretty much all done algorithmically now.
I don't think anyone will mind that one so much. Although, I say that, but then you look at like the flash crash.
The flash crash.
And all the bots selling when they should have been buying, or vice versa.
Stupid bots.
Yeah.
Stupid God. Brian.
I don't know. I mean, will bots replace, you know, solicitors and lawyers and stuff like that, or they just replace the admin people who work there? I think it's the simpler stuff. I mean, in terms of, you know, we talked about, you know, call centers being replaced by bots.
Yeah.
Mm. Most of the level of call centers that we're talking that will be replaced by bots, those jobs have kind of been outsourced outside the UK.
True.
Anyway, I think that's going to come into the debate about it as well.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, companies are going to, if this is a cost cutting measure, then companies will have already sort of outsourced those jobs.
I've got a stat here.
Boom.
Gartner reckons that up to 85% of customer service centres will, as they put it, go virtual by 2020. But I think that really means that we're looking at job losses for 85% of people who work in call centres up to, which is a bit of a cop out. But basically that will decimate call centre jobs. Yeah. So I don't really know what you do about that. I mean, retrain people. I don't know. It's a really, really difficult issue.
Mm-hmm. Presumably firms like solicitors and that will choose not to use them to protect their jobs. So.
Well, there'd be an element of that, definitely, and there already is, like with regulatory things. Like, think about buying a house or whatever, you have to do everything by letter or fax.
Yeah.
But that is part of the... That is,
keep it old school.
There's an element of protectionism there. There are reasons for it, but they're not good reasons.
Mm.
Okay, great chat. Good chat. That was a strong chat about Facebook. So let's go around the room. Chris Martin, kiss my Facebook or say it to the hand because the Facebook ain't listening.
Kiss my Facebook.
Charlotte G.
Yeah, definitely kiss my Facebook.
Neil Bennett.
Yep.
Yeah. Just yep. You're not going to make it to the podcast.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Listener, give yourself a couple of seconds to recover from that, and we're going to come smashing back in and talk about Amazon. Neil Bennett. Ta 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 ta. You keep reading, you keep reading, and you keep reading, you keep reading. Amazon had a big announcement this week. What's the deal with that?
Well, Amazon has launched a luxury version of the Kindle, and everyone seems to have lost their rag over how expensive it is.
How expensive is it, Chris?
It's £269.
But that's not the most expensive one, is it?
No, it goes up to £329.
How much? £329.
Outrageous.
So that's the difference between the Wi-Fi only and the one with free 3G.
So who is going to buy this?
Beyonce.
I don't know. Businessmen with a lot of money who travel a lot.
Do you want to hear my theory on this?
My parents? I think that's the thing. This is, you know,
my theory was your parents.
Yeah. It's a kind of, you know, I think that people are saying, oh, it's a lot of money for an e-reader, but it seems to be something which has been very well designed as a product. It's supposed to be a kind of thing that you'd be happy, you know, that my parents or, you know, my other half's parents would happily take on holiday with them in the same way that they would rather turn up with a hardback book than a paperback book.
Yeah, that's basically my theory in a slightly more theoretical sense. But I think, you know, in the same way as when you go into Starbucks and there are always three different price options for everything, this is the premium luxury product. Amazon owns the ebook market. Mm. And so if there's a product at the top that's £300, the £110 Kindle e-reader, which is perfectly great, suddenly looks really cheap. Mm. You've also got a minimal number of people who are going to buy them. So in the same way as, you know, some tradespeople decide to charge more than everyone else because there's a certain amount of work going around, and even if they lose some jobs, you might as well get the jobs where you get paid the higher yield. Mm. People buy ebooks for gifts, so again, there's almost a benefit for it being a bit more expensive because it feels like a better gift. And basically, the point is, if you're going to buy an e-reader, you're probably going to buy a Kindle. So there's now this broad range of prices. And you can decide whether you want to go super premium or relatively budget, still over £100, or all points in between.
The question is kind of, is it, you know, is that too much money for what you're getting? You know, if you're getting something which has been crafted and leather bound and, you know, feels nice, you know, that's not
well, about, in the case of money. The £300 one, it's got 3G. So, there's convenience there. Wherever you are on the planet, in principle, you can just download a book without ever having to think about it.
But is it that different? That's the thing.
I would say not. I think like for me, I've not actually seen this new device, but I can't conceive of a better experience than like the backlit Paperwhite.
Yeah, Paperwhite.
The Paperwhite, yeah.
I can see why Amazon have done it, but as a consumer, I mean, I've actually got more than one Kindle. I don't really know how this has happened.
Listen to her.
But I use the Paperwhite because it's backlit and that's kind of quite handy. But I don't see how. It's pretty much just fine. I'm not saying it's like the perfect e-reading experience, but I don't really see how it can be that vastly improved. Maybe incrementally.
To go back to my torturous coffee analogy, a cup of coffee is just fine. Mm. But people do spend the extra 50p to get the
hazelnut
roast. Yeah, and all that stuff. And, you know, or, you know, a haircut's just fine. But as a man, you can go to Mr. Cuts, I don't know. You can go to a £5 barber or you can go to a £30 barber and there will be a difference, but it's not that much of a difference. Yeah. It's to do with experience, it's to do with the feeling of quality.
I guess it's people that want to have, the feeling of luxury. Yeah. This is why they exist. People want to kind of...
You can't blame Amazon for
people
going even...
Having too much money and not enough sense.
Because there wasn't really anywhere else they could go.
Yeah.
But also, if you look at the real books, you can go and buy a £5 paperback Tesco's,
Can
go and buy a a hardback Penguin Classic that's been beautifully designed from Waterstones and pay five times the price for it.
And that is why I have my fully leather-bound illustrated Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Wow!
I wouldn't be the same if it was paperback.
Good Lord!
So I've just basically brought myself around to the opposite view.
Right.
Well done.
Leather-bound Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Pretty cool.
Okay.
all the nerd points there.
So Amazon dominates the ebook market. How do we feel about that? I mean, it really dominates the ebook market. It can't be a good thing, can it?
Competition's always better. Everyone's looking at me. I don't know.
Tell us.
Yeah, I think it's a shame to not have as much choice. So we talked about it in a previous podcast about Nook shutting down its UK store.
Yeah.
And although that's being switched over to Sainsbury's, Sainsbury's doesn't have the same power of selling that kind of product that Amazon does. So
I mean, Amazon does a great job. You know, I read Kindle e-books all the time. But it can't be helped. And I tell you, it's not good from an author's point of view.
No.
Because basically Amazon sets the price and that's it. And it's not great for a kind of variety point of view either to have a market that's so dominated by one company.
This, I mean, this is a problem with tech in so many ways. That I don't know. I guess the problem is that maybe the barriers to entry, I don't know, maybe they're too high. I'm not sure.
I think the barriers to entry are actually really low. It's like when who was it won the Mercury Music Award the other year, having been Elbow. Mm-hmm. And your man from Elbow said, there's never been a better time for getting your music out to the world.
Yeah,
there's never been a worse time to make money from it.
And yes.
Certainly, it's true of all kinds of publishing, but book publishing is the same.
Mm.
You can write a book, looking around the room, you can write a book, and you could publish it tomorrow, and in principle, it could be read by everybody. Amazon is absolutely clear about that, as long as it hits certain minimum standards, and
yeah.
My dad's book definitely tested those standards. You can publish, but then whether anyone buys it or not is controlled, and Amazon actually controls the pricing as well.
Yeah, so
the pricing
is
the main issue, really, isn't it?
Well, I think the problem is that our laws haven't adapted to the digital age, which I say totally. I've said that in every single podcast.
Yeah.
But it's basically, if it was a kind of, you know, a company that was viewed as being physical, although obviously they are physical, they're a huge infrastructure. I do feel like they would be regulated differently.
Yeah.
If that was an energy company, then no way would we want to have one company setting all the prices. No. So, don't know what you do about it, though.
But as customers, we like it.
Yeah, as customers, we like it. And we are partly responsible for that situation.
It's a convenience. Yeah, I saw a talk by a neuroscientist a few months ago. Mm. You know, come out there, instantly download book.
Book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't absolutely.
Need to put your details in. I can buy it on my phone. Yeah. It's on my.
It is driven by our behaviour. I agree.
So everyone here reads e-books. Would that be fair to say?
Occasionally.
I prefer a real book.
Really? Oh no! I read e-books every day.
I'm exclusively an e-book guy.
Yeah.
But you read it on a Kindle, Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
So I have a Kindle.
I read it on two Kindles simultaneously.
Yeah. See, that's great. Again, whisper sync. Forget.
Do you hold them and have one page on one and then one on the next page?
There we go. Yeah, like that. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Listener, she is reading in the style of the robot from Short Circuit, Johnny Five.
Ah.
Data.
Good need reference. Input.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah. That's what I do as I read. Need input. Must learn.
Do you read it really fast and then go, ah.
That is exactly what I do.
Always comes back to bots, isn't it? Yeah. So Amazon is 20 years old.
Whew.
I believe. Anyway, it's copyright notice says 96 to 2016. So
okay.
How's Amazon doing, do we think?
Pretty much fine.
Yeah. It's in profit now.
I mean, they seem to be absolutely fine.
Yeah. I mean, making a lot of money from web services now.
Yeah.
Actually making profit. Just a really interesting company because it's a bookshop that's now a tech company.
Yep.
There's now an
enterprise tech provider. It does cloud services. Yeah.
Right, everyone wants to be like that. You know, if you look at what Uber's doing, it started off as a taxi company, and now they want to, you know, they want to use that infrastructure to
dominate
Uber,
the world.
Yeah. To be Uber for anything and everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's the smart thing about Amazon, actually, is that they recognise that what they were good at was distribution quickly. So instead of selling books, they became a distribution company. And then they recognised that what was great was that their web infrastructure was amazing, that they could deliver this service all over the planet. So they started selling that as a service, and now they're dominating the cloud server industry.
And Facebook's doing the same thing. You know, a lot of the kind of more minor announcements at FA were like, you know, them looking at leveraging the fact that they've got all this, you know, kind of infrastructure.
Mm.
They've got all this kind of way for people to communicate. And it's like, okay, what other, you know, markets going to try and take over.
Yeah, I mean, that could be interesting, actually. Because essentially they kind of have their own cloud services, and then they realise, we've got some spare capacity, we could sell it, and then it turns. Could have Facebook cloud.
And Jeff Bezos, Amazon guy, doesn't allow PowerPoint in the company. Fact.
Okay.
If you want to have a meeting, you have to send a bullet-pointed note of what you're going to say in the meeting, and then everyone reads it, and then you go to the meeting, and then they discuss it. So you don't have the chance to influence by emotion and presentation.
That's okay, actually, with me.
I think it's brilliant.
That's one of one of the best things, probably, you could have told me about, Jeff.
So internally, the principle, at least, is internally, you can't be sold on something.
Yes.
You have to have time to digest the information and then make a decision.
And also you concentrate, if there's a PowerPoint, people stare at that rather than concentrating on what's actually being discussed.
And you can't possibly, convince them of anything just using words, obviously. So there's
there's
a slight flaw in that argument.
If there's a visual, it's not so useful if there's an actual visual element.
But I would say I suspect it's a reaction to working in companies where the person who shouts loudest and in the most convincing way wins the argument.
Which never happens in the publishing industry.
Oh no. Oh no.
On that bombshell, let's go around the room. Amazon Kindle, great to read or going to seed? Chris Martin.
Great to read.
Charlotte G.
Great, but I'm not paying that much money.
Okay. Neil Bennett's.
Give me a Penguin classic.
Great. Aww. Thanks for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, listener. It was a long one, but I think a good one. Do get in touch and let us know your thoughts and opinion and to shake us down for cash. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor at IDGUK. We will be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech, courtesy of our good friends Audio Technica. So find us on iTunes, SoundCloud and all the other places from which you source podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, report us, that means reviewers, and tell us your friends. Go on, tell your friends right now. And until then, say goodbye, team.
Bye. Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.